the emphasized penetration effort of truth is felt in the network, even in the 100,000 yearly couples. Mallory can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the religious truth along with myself.
To the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. Periodically in the news, one hears of people caught in a terrible fog on a freeway somewhere, where you had a pileup of 20, 30, 40, or sometimes even 50 cars in a chain collision. They call these killer fogs. And there's a spiritual equivalent of a killer fog. That tends to happen when one's been training for some time, maybe for years or even decades, and big chunks of the deeper spiritual need have worked their way up to the surface, so to speak, near the surface. And the thing about these spiritual needs is they're karmic jangles of pain and confusion. And pain and confusion together produce the fog. The pain aspect contributes to the fog because we want to avoid pain. And what's trying to come up has very, very painful features to it. To allow it to come fully into experience means experiencing deep spiritual pain. The confusion aspect contributes to the fog because it's confusion. And confusion is, by its nature, confusing. And that mental confusion is a big part of the fog. Mental and spiritual confusion. Kind of sense of losing one's direction spiritually. Losing one's grounding. Having one's sense of purpose diminished to a seeming vanishing point. One of our scriptures that we recite in morning service and in other ceremonies points this out. When minute, infinitesimally small becomes, when large, it transcends all dimensions, space. Speaking of the Buddha nature there. When we're very confused spiritually or under the influence of confusion, it seems to disappear to a kind of vanishing point. When the confusion's not there, it's everywhere we look. If we think of how if we find ourselves in driving down the freeway in a killer fog, what's the most sensible thing to do? Basically, there's two things you can do. One of them, either one of them in the situation, the circumstances will dictate how possible it is, the degree to which you can do it. One possibility is just to pull over and wait it out. Another possibility is if you are continuing on, to slow down and to make sure that there's a maximum distance between you and the person in front of you. Of course, if you can't see them, that's problematical. But the slower you're going, the more time you have to react. If someone up ahead stomps on their brakes for some reason, you can't dictate where the person behind you will be. That's their training. You can only do your own training. But you can do your best to keep as much distance as possible between you and the person in front of you. Of course, there are other practical considerations. If you slow down too much, then some foolish person might try to pass and not be able to see what he's doing and plow into someone head-on in another lane. So in such circumstances, of course, one has to meditatively attempt to make the best choice one can, given all the conditions. And that's what you have to do to negotiate the spiritual killer fog. You have to meditatively do the best you can, given all the conditions, all the circumstances. There's a particular step of the Eightfold Path, a particular aspect of the Eightfold Path that is especially relevant to the killer spiritual fog, to any spiritual fog. And of course it is right mindfulness. There are rather technical explanations on how to do training in mindfulness. But really the gist of such technical explanations is that basically mindfulness is bringing the attitude and the meditative concentration of the practice of meditation into other aspects of daily life. So mindfulness just means bringing the mind and heart of meditation into other aspects of daily life. It's important to remember that the Eightfold Path is really more like the spokes of a single wheel than separate steps. They're aspects of one unity. Therefore, it's important to remember that you can't leave out the preceptual aspects of the Eightfold Path. And you can't leave out the faith and wisdom aspects. I've explained many times that the Eightfold Path divides into three main categories. The precepts category, right action, right speech, right livelihood, consider right thought in there as well. The meditative aspects, right meditation, right mindfulness, right effort, and the wisdom aspect, right understanding. And you can also throw right thought back in on that one as a kind of ninth wheel. Right thought fits in both the perceptual and the wisdom aspect. So the practice of mindfulness really can't be divorced from the precepts side of things, nor from the faith and wisdom side of things. And the precept side of things that's most important for right mindfulness is our intention, our wish to do as little harm as possible. Or to put it another way, not to continue the rolling of the wheel of suffering, the wheel of greed, hate, and delusion. That's the precept side of things in a nutshell. The wisdom side of things is remembering our spiritual purpose and remembering to look up in our heart with our heart and not willfully perpetuate or precipitate ourselves into despair and negativity. So what does mindfulness look like now if we put all of these together? I put my shoes straight before I enter the meditation hall. I put them neatly together because if I leave them in a disorderly way, someone is more likely to trip over them. I put them to the side neatly together. In other words, compactly. Not as an aesthetic act, although it has that aspect, but fundamentally out of consideration for others. That's the precept side. I pay attention to the way I'm doing it and what I'm doing when I do it. That's the meditation side. I do it with a heart that's looking up and not down. As an act in which I believe to have worth, inherent worth. In other words, as an act which in my heart of hearts I know to have the significance that all acts have, because nothing is divorced from the Buddha nature, nothing is separate from the Buddha nature. And that's the wisdom, faith side. If we now apply these reflections to the idea of a killer spiritual fog, killer fog is one in which you get seriously lost, so to speak, and end up in a serious spiritual crash or wreck. So the precepts side of driving in that fog . Remember that all of our actions have consequences and that we wish to be a responsible person in our actions, because to neglect our responsibilities or to act in a willfully irresponsible way perpetuates greed, hate, and delusion, perpetuates suffering. Meditative aspect. Keep bringing the mind back to this present moment. What needs to be done now? What is it that's good to do now? Keep coming back to one's own heart, one's own spiritual center throughout the activities of daily life. The faith and wisdom aspect. Look up, not down. Remember what is important and what is real, and what is relative to that not real and not important. In 1976, when she was beginning her retreat, her master wrote, "Nothing matters, mindfulness is all." The nothing matters here, another way of putting that is external things are not the true reality. Hold fast to the eternal. Remember what is real. Remember what is not real. The problem with the fog is everything gets turned topsy-turvy, and things that are not real and fundamentally not important become very important and very real. And true spiritual reality seems to be nowhere to be found. It's easier, more humanly possible, to pay attention to what one is doing if one is not rushing. If one is not pushing too hard, it is also easier to pay attention to what one is doing if one is not so slack in one's effort. So one's mind is just everywhere all at once, so to speak, flitting from illusion to illusion. So mindfulness, to be right mindfulness, there needs to be a steady, gentle effort. Killer spiritual fog it's a killer fog because if one allows oneself to get caught in it seriously, one can get overwhelmed by doubt and confusion. And if that happens, it is a choice that one has made. There is no external necessity in it. We can choose not to succumb to doubt and confusion. We can choose to keep our practice of meditation regular and strong. We can choose to pay attention during the day to the things that we really need to do, and to do them in a mindful way. We can choose to remember, keep close to our heart, the meaning and the purpose of the precepts, which are the lifeblood of the Buddhas and ancestors. We do this, neither a killer fog nor anything else in the world can do us real harm.